Diversity.
You have caused confusion.
Oh, precious moron.
Well, hello, everyone. In this video, I'm going to elucidate a theory I've had for quite a while, that Kamala Harris is a jobber. Now, if that phrase does not mean anything to you, I'm going to explain what a jobber is. Here are the contents for the whole video. I'm going to explain what a jobber is. I'm going to give some basic assumptions behind my thinking, which will not be obvious to lots of you watching this video. I will give you the essential theory. I will provide evidence for my claim. I will consider a spanner in the works. And then I will answer the question, can this predict the election? So to start with, what is a jobber? Well, a jobber is a term taken from pro wrestling. And some of you who watched it in the 80s and the 90s may remember that there used to be these wimpy guys on there who, you know, they'd be no-name guys. It's Mario Mancini. It's Frank Williams. They'd have, like, rubbish names, instantly forgettable. And they were there, basically, to make the star look good and to put them over, which means to do the job. So doing the job in wrestling terms is they're there to lose. And you can see here, this guy is getting... He's there to make Sergeant Slaughter look good. Now, so that's what a jobber is. Why do I think that Kamala Harris is one? Well, to understand this, first of all, you have to share some of my basic assumptions. One of the things you have to understand is that I come at everything through the lens of something called elite theory. One of the main elite theorists was a chap called Gaetano Mosca. If you're interested in this, by the way, you can learn more about it in my best-selling book, The Populist Delusion.
There's a lot of great information and history in this book, and even a mystery trick that you can learn at the end.
But, so this is Mosca on how elections in democracies work. What I'm saying is that the actual votes, you know, what the people do, matters a lot less than what the elite factions want. This is Mosca in the ruling class. He says, what happens in other forms of government, namely that an organized minority imposes its will on the disorganized majority, happens also and to perfection, whatever the appearances to the contrary, under the representative system. He's talking about a liberal democracy like ours, or like the one in America. When we say that the voters, quote unquote, choose their representative, we are using a language that is very inexact. The truth is that the representative has himself elected by the voters. And if that phrase should seem too inflexible and too harsh to fit some cases, we might qualify it by saying that his friends have him elected. In elections, as in all other manifestations of social life, those who have the will, and especially the moral and intellectual means, to force their will upon others, take the lead over the others, and command them. So I agree with this by Mosca. So then it becomes not a question of which of the two people can get the more votes, but who are their friends? Who are those powerful people who are trying to get them into power? And which one of them has more power? Well, I mean, in the West, we're used to the uniparty, right? We're used to both the sides essentially being on the same page and their differences to be rather superficial. In this election, and I would argue that there are two genuine power factions at play, what I call the techno-globalists and the Zionists. So I've just done a kind of comparison of who these, what they stand for, the techno-globalists and the Zionists, okay? The techno-globalists are pro-Palestine. The Zionists, of course, are hardcore pro-Israel. The techno-globalists are for globalism. The Zionists are generally for American power, because American power is what keeps the Schmittian exception for Israel. A Schmittian exception is a term taken from Carl Schmitt. It basically means that Israel get to do whatever they want to do. They can get away with things that other nations cannot. And, I mean, that has been abundantly clear. The only reason they can do that is because the hegemon, the thing that decides the exception, which is the American power, allows it to happen. The techno-globalists are woke. The Zionists are anti-woke. The techno-globalists are for radical racial justice, reparations, things like that. The Zionists are for Martin Luther King-style colorblind civil rights. The techno-globalists control the liberal media, what people typically call MSM, the mainstream media. It's the liberal media. The Zionists control right-wing media and lots of alternative media, which is easily missed. I think it's becoming more and more clear, and I'll explain that in a moment, because I think many people who support Donald Trump or who are on the right may actually miss this, because it's not, well, it's really obvious to me, but it's not always obvious to people who aren't paying attention. The kayfabe for the techno-globalist, now kayfabe is basically a wrestling term for in storyline, the kind of make-believe, this is what the fans are meant to think. It means it's not really real, okay? Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant were friends, right? They didn't hate each other in real life, even though they were mortal enemies on screen, right? So in the kayfabe, techno-globalists are for social democracy, the Zionists are for liberal democracy. In kayfabe, the techno-globalists are against capitalism. Of course, in reality, huge, huge multinational corporates back Kamala Harris. She got the backing of like Pepsi, various other huge companies recently. The Zionists are against communism, apparently. Kayfabe, techno-globalists are against oppressive structures. You know, structural racism or whatever, you know, even in the more extreme elements, they think of Israel as an oppressive structure. That is why they're pro-Palestine, right? They are for the oppressed, whereas the Zionists are against globalist constructions typified by Klaus Schwab and the WEF, the World Economic Forum. The demons at Davos, as Dr. Steve Turley calls them. The true goal of the techno-globalists is to expand their own power. The true goal of Israel first. The true goal of the Zionists, of course, is Israel first, or whatever Israel wants to achieve. Israel has maximalist aims, stretching all the way from the river to the sea, and they want to expand that territory to be all Israel, regardless of what anyone says. That is what the Zionists are pushing towards. Are the techno-globalists prepared to break all the rules? Yes, we have already seen how many rules they're prepared to break, both in Europe and in previous elections in America. And things like Russiagate and all of the other nonsense that Trump has had to deal with have shown how far the techno-globalists are prepared to go. Are the Zionists prepared to break all the rules? Well, when it comes to Israel, yes. When it comes to America or the domestic scene in America, so far the answer has been no, but that appears to be changing. Now, in terms of the proof of the alt media space generally being on the Zionist side, if you remember, after Elon Musk made a few comments that were deemed inappropriate by the ADL and various other people, such as Ben Shapiro here, he took a little trip. And since then, it's been difficult to ignore the fact that Musk has been promoting characters like this. Now, I've shared this in previous videos and streams. These are my slop tiers. Right at the top there, you can see how aggressive their Zionism is. Ben Shapiro, hardcore, Peterson and Murray. I mean, cartoonishly pro-Israel, as is Tommy here in this country. But then on the level two, you've got Libs of TikTok, you've got Cernovich, or End Wokeness, as his big Twitter account is, Ian Chungley in Clown World. And there are layers below that as well. We can ignore level five for now. If you notice that Elon Musk, long gone are the days where Elon Musk is saying interesting under Keith Woods' posts and things like that. He now almost exclusively promotes and pushes these first three levels, especially level two slop. That seems to be his go-to. He loves End Wokeness. He loves Libs of TikTok, Ashley Sinclair. I mean, he's always pushing these accounts. These are just a kind of cross-section of various hardcore kind of Zionists and people who are connected, let's just say, who are very obviously pro-Zionist. That Elon Musk just I mean, these are just randomly taken from the past week. You can go any day, any hour of any day, and he is pushing people like Kissin, Lex Friedman, David Sacks, End Wokeness. You know, Bill Maher gets a lot of retweets from Musk, which is curious because Bill Maher's on the other side. More on him in a moment. Ashley Sinclair, I mean, the list goes on and on. Also, interestingly, various other people who were pro-Democrat, pro-Biden 4 years ago, for some reason are coming out and saying they're done with politics. Mark Zuckerberg is the biggest example, but there are tons and tons of others. They tend to have something in common, if you don't notice, you know, Mark Zuckerberg. Well, you can work that out for yourself, but they tend to come with a prepackaged love of a certain country in the Middle East. You'll also notice that Musk champions other people, other rich people like Jamie Dimon, and he points the finger, like I said, at the globalists, World Economic Forum, stick a George Soros in there. You know, these are the enemy in MAGA world. So that is all evidence that the coordination on the Zionist side is much greater. And I believe that since his little trip, Elon Musk has become very fully on board with the same agenda that people like Douglas Murray, Jordan Peterson, Ben Shapiro, I mean, they're all a very, very identifiable network in my view. Here are a list of billionaires backing Trump. Miriam Adelson, of course, one of the most famous, again, a hardcore Zionist. Musk, also, we've just talked about, but there are many, many other names there. And if you go down that list of names, now it's not exclusively, you know, it's not exclusively people on who are hardcore Zionists, but many, many of them are extremely hardcore Zionists. And Trump has made it clear where his bread is buttered on that issue. So I'm just saying that the reason I'm lingering on this is because if you're an OG MAGA from 2016, you may not think that Trump would be that connected with all these sorts of people, or you may kind of still think that he's, broadly speaking, a kind of anti-war candidate or something like that. That was a lot of his original kind of Tea Party support. I've noticed recently that various libertarian types, Tom Woods had Scott Horton on his show recently, and you know, they were talking about how awful they think Trump is. That is because on certain foreign policy ends, mainly Israel, Trump is, you know, seems to be leaning into the plan of starting a war with Iran or something like that. Whether that happens or not, I don't know, but that's what Scott Horton and Tom Woods were talking about. All right, so before I, yes, let us lay out the essential theory now, okay? And I've laid it out almost like a kind of logical argument here with premise one, premise two, premise three, and a conclusion. So the premise one is that when two elite factions are at odds, the more powerful faction will get their way. And as per Mosca earlier, that dictates who wins elections. Elections are dictated by what power wants, not by what the people want. And I'm saying that one of these two factions wants Trump. Second premise, techno-globalists are committed to Ukraine and are queasy about Israel's human rights record and general unpopularity with the left wing. Kamala Harris represents this position. And very obviously, if you notice, Kamala Harris has been very big on Ukraine, just like Keir Starmer in this country and various other techno-globalists. They're all very big on Ukraine. Trump, meanwhile, I mean, there's clear sunlight between Trump's position on Ukraine and Kamala Harris's. So the third premise is Zionists are committed to Israel. They seek to pivot the USA away from commitment to Ukraine, and Donald Trump represents this. That is not even controversial, I don't think. All of the headlines say this over and over again. So the conclusion I am reaching is that the Zionists are more powerful than the techno-globalists. They control more politicians. They have greater resources. Therefore, Harris is there to lose to Trump. That is the essential theory. Now, before I get into my evidence, let's take a little bit of an advert. For old time's sake, buy a course at the Academic Agency, and I'm going to play Foundations of Economics, the original. Are you sick of hearing about Marx and Keynes? Do you want to know why neoclassical economics is so flawed? Have you ever wondered how to work out the marginal productivity of a burger bun? Do you want to level up your econ knowledge? Buy it now. £350. Foundations of Economics. Foundations of Economics.
I'm here.
Foundations of Economics. Get it now. Of course, Kamala Harris could do with taking Foundations of Economics, couldn't she? My gosh. All right, so let's have a look at the evidence for my general theory here. And I've got a number of exhibits that I want to share. So exhibit A is that Governor Josh Shapiro, the Pennsylvania governor, touted to go big places in the Democrat Party in the future. Ducked being the VP pick. Harris went to a guy called Tim Walz, weak candidate, leftist, speaks only to the core, easily ridiculed by right-wingers, doesn't particularly appeal to independents or centrists. Josh Shapiro would have been a much better pick in terms of the domestic policy. Obviously, Josh Shapiro is from a certain background. In fact, it was suggested by Trump at one point that is why he was not picked, because Trump was insinuating that there's anti-Semitism on the left. Shapiro rubbished those claims, but the fact is that the actual actions are more important than words, and Josh Shapiro refused to be Kamala Harris's VP. So that's the first strong signal. Why is a big name ducking this? It's probably because he's got sights on running in 4 years' time. Now, the big name who ducked being the VP pick was Gavin Newsom. This guy, he's got cartoonishly good looks, kind of looks like a kind of comic book representation of what the American president would be. But they decided in their infinite wisdom, the Democrats, that this kind of limp-wristed, fat old man, Tim Walz. He's going to be the VP. Well, what I'm saying is they haven't picked strong people, and Kamala Harris is a historically weak candidate. She is weak across every single vertical. And considering that their kind of kayfabe position is that Donald Trump is the a threat to democracy, you know, worse than every mid-century dictator going. They're not exactly taking it that seriously, are they? Harris and Waltz, is it that's your dream team to defeat the Orange Menace? You know, what I'm saying is that Kamala Harris is a ridiculously, I mean, she's weak with men. She's weak. She's not particularly strong with Hispanics. She is weaker with the black community than she ought to be, considering that she is black herself. You know, so she's not actually bringing many people on board. She was historically unpopular in the Democratic primaries 4 years ago. I mean, I don't need to go over all of this. Everybody knows Kamala Harris is astonishingly weak. Her raw stats in terms of charisma, in terms of intelligence, in terms of everything is low. So she needed backup. She needed somebody strong next to her. And they picked this Waltz guy. They didn't pick Newsom or Shapiro. So these are indicators, I would suggest. Exhibit C, Keir Starmer met with Trump and not Harris when he went over to America. He went all the way over to America and he didn't meet Kamala Harris? What does he know that we don't? Why didn't he meet Kamala Harris? So that's another pretty strong indicator. Another exhibit, Nate Silver, probably the most famous pollster in America, keeps on calling the election for Trump and upsetting progressives in the process. Now, I will note that Nate Silver's a pretty hardcore Zionist. And, okay, he keeps on going back and forth, and he just kind of, but he keeps on playing this game where every once in a while, you're like, yeah, Trump's going to win it. My models say Trump's going to win. And then he'll kind of backslide a bit and say, oh, Kamala's catching up and all that sort of stuff. But basically, why does he keep on doing that? Interesting. Exhibit E, Bill Maher, another pretty hardcore Zionist. Now, despite maintaining the kayfabe that he's generally an anti-Trump liberal, Bill Maher has consistently undermined Kamala Harris. When she did the brat thing, he said, sorry, Trump is more brat. You know, he passed it off as a joke, but the fact is he counter-signaled Kamala Harris. When Kamala Harris first came on the scene, he said that she was quieter than an electric car. When she criticized Israel, he told her that to shut up, basically. Shut up. That was only a week ago. He mocked CNN for their Harris-Waltz interview and said that they wonder why the kids get their news from TikTok. So here we have Bill Maher consistently counter-signaling, undermining Kamala Harris. Yeah, he can pass her off as a joke. You know, Bill Maher has this role in the system, Aaron McIntyre will tell you, to act as a kind of, you know, the most sensible liberal in the room. You know, he can deadpan at you. But I would say that his comments go a little bit beyond his usual kind of containment shtick. I would say that he's counter-signaling Harris. I will also note that Elon Musk, Bill Maher is like the only liberal person who gets retweeted by Musk on a regular basis. Just so happens to be a hardcore Zionist as well. Kind of interesting, isn't it? And finally, Foreign Policy, a very influential magazine, you know, for the establishment, for the foreign policy establishment, openly admit that efforts to Trump-proof Ukraine are failing. So all of the signals suggest that there is going to be this pivot away from Ukraine. Now, Kamala Harris doesn't give that signal. Trump does. So the foreign policy establishment are basically telling Europe, telling the other globalists, hey, look, Houston, we have a problem here. Ukraine's probably going to get wrapped up soon. Okay, now these are signals cutting through the noise. I always look at signals. Noise is, you know, whatever the latest drama is, Trump said this, Kamala did that. Look at this poll, look at that poll, look at this poll, look at that poll, look at this poll, look at that poll. Hey, look at this poll. Oh, look at that poll. All bollocks. That's all noise. The signals are the things I'm pointing to here. And these signals suggest to me that something is afoot that is different from, for example, in 2020, when the media were in lockstep with Biden, or in 2016, there was no dissent on the media side. There were no Elon Musk's counter signaling. You know, remember, Mark Zuckerberg was helping out in a big way in 2020. All of those things have stopped. You've now got Bill Maher counter-signaling on TV on a daily basis, and the world's richest man openly backing Donald Trump. Something's changed. Now, you could say, oh, well, things have got so much worse. I don't know. Call me cynical. I am cynical. I would say the thing that has changed was 10/7 and the situation in the Middle East. That's the thing that has really changed. Otherwise, where were all these people 4 years ago? Come on. Come on. All right, let's carry on. Now, there is a spanner in the works, friends, a spanner that could prove the undoing of my Harris as jobber theory. And that spanner in the works is simply this. The OG neocons are backing Harris. Dick Cheney, Liz Cheney, all of that faction. Kagan's, you name it, they're all backing Harris, both 200 of them. Bush Jr. stopped short of endorsing, but pretty much all the rest of his cabinet are for Harris. There seems to be a split between Bush-era neocons and the current Zionist faction, who are kind of okay with what Netanyahu's doing. The OG neocons seem to have issues. That's why they're going for Harris. And I think it's kind of a weird flex from Kamala Harris. Oh, yeah, all of these people you guys hated 10 years ago, 5 years ago even, oh, they're endorsing me. So it's kind of like, I mean, it's almost like, I mean, if you remember during a wrestling, Austin versus McMahon, and it'd be like Triple H coming out and saying, oh, yeah, I'm endorsed by Mr. McMahon, by the way. I'm your corporate champion. That's basically what Kamala Harris is saying when she's boasting about being endorsed by Dick Cheney. I'm your corporate champion. I'm your regime-backed champion. Which, of course, in the MAGA kayfabe, gives Trump more credibility. It makes Trump seem more punk. It makes Trump, gives him more edgy credibility. Because, let's face it, nobody likes Dick Cheney. So, I mean, again, I'm cynical about all of this. I think that you know, there's a certain degree to which all of these moves help Trump in a strange way. But it does seem that there is a genuine split between the OG neocons, the Bush-era neocons, and the current Zionists, as represented by somebody like Ben Shapiro. The OG neocons are much more socially liberal. They're really committed to, you know, a liberal democracy. But more importantly, they just hate Russia. And they've always had this kind of hate boner for Russia. There's Victoria Nuland. And it is said that they don't dislike Netanyahu, who's lurched to the hard right, and especially the religious nature of it, the kind of religious zeal that you see in Israel now. The neocons see themselves as secular. Their religion, of course, is bombing the world into democracy. So it does seem that, you know, there's some genuine trouble here on the kind of side of the Zionist coalition. Why are the neocons backing Harris? Now, it has been suggested that the power of AIPAC is now greater than that of the neocons, who are losing influence. But this remains to be seen. There's an awful lot of powerful establishment regime figures connected to the original neocons, the national security establishment, that seemed to be signaling support for Kamala Harris, despite all of these signs that she is a jobber. And I don't think they're clever enough, really, to pull this play that it makes it, you know, Trump seem cooler, that all of these swamp creatures are supporting Harris. You know, I don't really think they're that smart. So I do think that this is something to watch, because it gives these people, you know, historically have run America. So that's a pretty big indicator that Harris could actually be a serious contender here. So can all of this be used to predict the election? Well, they do say that whenever a closed question is asked in a headline, the answer is always no. And unfortunately, after going through all this analysis and showing all the evidence that Kamala Harris is a jobber, the fact is that the techno-globalists are completely insane. They are prepared to do anything. So we can never rule out the possibility that these people will just go for it, regardless of how many people want to vote for Trump, regardless of the power on the other side, regardless of the consequences. They could just go for it. That's what Curtis Yarvin said in a recent interview that he did, that he expects shenanigans again, basically. You can never count that out. My feeling, though, is that there are lots of indicators suggesting it may go the other way. And if we come out with a Trump victory, I would not in the least bit be surprised, because all of the indicators have been pointing there pretty much since 10/7 happened. The media are not behaving in the same way as they have in the past. And frankly, the kind of old playbooks and tactics don't seem to be as shrill this time around. And let's just put it a different way. If the so-called deep state, the powers that be, didn't want Trump in the election, then he'd be in jail, wouldn't he? Let's face it, he'd just be in jail already. And that hasn't happened. In fact, what has happened, and I could have put this in my evidences, but it's kind of by the by, is that every single trial that Trump had turned out to blue anon, didn't it? It all turned out to be absolute rubbish that went nowhere. And during when they are happening, I consistently said to people, Trump, when we're going to jail, this is all bollocks. This is all just kayfabe stuff for blue anon. And that has aged much better than all of those people who were sighing at me at the time. Of course, nobody ever admits that they're wrong about anything. I will be the first to admit that I'm wrong, by the way. And I'm perfectly prepared to be wrong on this. But, you know, all of that turned out to be absolute nonsense, didn't it? So I'm still pretty, you know, reasonably certain that a lot of signs indicate that Trump is gonna have it. But, you know, let's just pretend we're in a world where come November, you know, oh, they've stopped the count, or, oh, you know, just because he's in front now doesn't mean he's won. A whole new batch of votes have to be counted, blah, blah, blah. I mean, yeah, maybe that scenario will happen. They're mad enough to do it, to be honest. I mean, they're mad enough to run somebody as atrocious as Kamala Harris as the candidate in the first place and try to gaslight in their kind of media wings that this is a serious candidate. So, I mean, they're mad enough to do that. So who knows? What I'm betting on here is that in every other scenario, the Zionists have taken a W recently. They have had their way across the board in all areas recently. All areas. An unmitigated string of victories for the Zionists. And the globalists have taken a lot of L's, a lot of losses. So on this ongoing kind of miniature civil war between the two sides, it seems to me that the techno-globalists kind of do the job to the Zionists fairly regularly. And maybe that's the best indicator of all. All right, get out. If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.